Hi, it's Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area on Thursday, November 12th. We begin with a lead article on the front page of the E edition of the Herald and Review, written by Kurt Erickson, who's the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Future of State Museum with Rauner. Illinois lawmakers offered some hope Tuesday to fans of the Illinois State Museum and its satellite facilities, but a final decision on reopening the shuttered institution remains in Governor Bruce Rauner's hands. In a rare show of bipartisan support, the Illinois House voted 82-32 in favor of legislation that would require the state to keep the museum open. That came after the Senate approved the proposal in August on a 40-9 vote. Rauner, who announced the closure of the facilities in June after he and the General Assembly failed to agree on a spending plan for the fiscal year beginning July 1st, still has the final say. The bill is under review, Rauner spokeswoman Catherine Kelly said Wednesday. At issue is Rauner's decision to shutter the 136-year-old museum in Springfield and its satellite facilities like the Southern Illinois Artisan Shop in Whittington, a gallery in Lockport, and the Dixon Mounds Burial Ground in Lewistown in reaction to the lack of a budget. Even if Rauner signs the measure, his office contends he still would have to decide how to manage the state's programs and spending without a spending blueprint from the legislature. State Senator Andy Menar, a Bunker Hill Democrat, introduced the proposal in July after Rauner announced the closure, along with plans to close the Hardin County Prison Work Camp and up to two juvenile prisons. The State Museum is a vital educational and cultural institution and should remain open. The success of this legislation is a credit to the work of every ISM supporter who made the case and showed how important this institution truly is, Menar said Wednesday. The situation has left the museum doors locked to the public since October 1st, but more than 40 employees continue to show up for work, pending the outcome of grievances and lawsuits filed by state worker unions. In Tuesday's action, a handful of Republicans showed their opposition to their governor's decision when they sided with majority Democrats in supporting the legislation. Among those voting yes included GOP State Representatives Tim Butler of Springfield, Terry Bryant of Murfreesboro, and Bill Mitchell of Forsyth. Among those Republicans voting no were State Representatives Reggie Phillips of Charleston, David Reese of Willow Hill, Dan Brady of Bloomington, and Keith Sommer of Morton. In the Senate, Republican State Senators Dale Ryder of Mattoon and Chapin Rose of Mahomet voted no. State Senator Dave Lutchtefeld, and I'm sure I'm doing a terrible disservice to him, Lutchtefeld, a Republican of Acaville, voted present. Republican State Senators Bill Brady of Bloomington and Neil Anderson of Moline did not cast votes. The legislation is Senate Bill 317. Turning inside, we pick up an article by Ryan Voiles, who's an H&R staff writer, Macon County to levy more property tax. After years without an increase, Macon County board members are set to raise the property tax levy for the coming fiscal year. The board will hold a special meeting at 5 p.m. tonight, that's Thursday, November 12th, for the Truth in Taxation hearing before its regular meeting to discuss a plan to vote on a budget that would increase the overall tax levy by 10.8% for the fiscal year that begins December 1st. The hearing is required by law, since the overall tax levy would increase by more than 5% from the prior year. Officials would not put an exact number on how much the levy increase would affect the tax rate residents would pay, saying they would have a better idea by early next year. The biggest increase in the levy will come from the general fund, which pays for the basic operation of county departments. While the levy has been kept level the past 3 years at $2.78 million, the board will discuss an increase of $1.21 million, raising it to $3.99 million. While it is an increase from years past, it is actually down from the $4.08 million levied by the county in 2011. The general fund balance currently has about $5.4 million, down from the $8.1 million on hand at the start of the current fiscal year, and at its lowest point since 2007. The amount would keep the county funded for roughly 2.5 months, which is more than the minimum recommendation of 2 months of funding from the Government Finance Officers Association. The overall budget is expected to be $68.9 million compared to $67.1 million in the current year's budget. While the current budget is estimating a $4.7 million shortfall in revenue, Reed expects the difference to level out as the county does not typically spend all that it budgets. Several board members at the Finance Committee that approved the proposed budget suggested using more of roughly $1.6 million in the Rainy Day Fund, which is money kept aside for potential emergencies. Although Reed said it is not yet an emergency situation, the continued decline in population and general funds could cause the situation to change. Our next article comes a little further in the local section. Ryan Voiles, staff writer, business community shows appreciation for veterans. Through a simple gesture, the free pie that came with Mitchell Tanner's meal was enough to bring a smile to his face. The Army veteran was at O'Charlie's restaurant Wednesday afternoon and was one of many who received a little extra thanks this Veterans Day. The thanks is appreciated, but it's not why I served, he said, but I won't argue against free pie. O'Charlie's was one of the places that offered discounts and other deals Wednesday for those who served in the armed forces. Whether it was major franchises or local establishments, businesses came out for Veterans Day to show their appreciation. A capacity crowd flowed through downtown cafe on Wednesday morning as more than 100 veterans and their families came to enjoy a free breakfast. The offer was provided by a partnership with Downtown Cafe and Eagle Ridge. Co-owner John Nineman said afterward he was excited about the crowd and that it was a good opportunity to do something nice for people. It's good to just be nice to someone for a change, he said. It was a real good morning for all of us. As other places offered veterans a chance to get a good meal, others offered a chance to improve their look. Industry Avenue Haircut Company in downtown Decatur offered veterans a free haircut throughout the day. For owner Tanya Goodbreak, it was a no-brainer. Veterans sacrifice so much for us. A free haircut is the least we can do, she said. Veterans across the area noted their appreciation for the kind gestures, though some noted a bit of trepidation about the special treatment. I merely served because I felt it was the right thing to do for my country, said Josh Mathers, a retired member of the Army who stopped at Decatur's Texas Roadhouse for lunch. I appreciate the thanks, but I hope people take the day to appreciate all those we lost. Our next article was written by Valerie Wells, an H&R staff writer. Schools use Veterans Day as a reminder of sacrifice and freedom. The Veterans Day is traditionally a national holiday, and schools are usually closed. In recent years, several area schools have remained open and used the day as a learning opportunity. The emphasis of the Day of Recognition is to reflect and pay tribute to our veterans, those living and also those who gave their lives for our freedom, said Randy Grigg, superintendent of Decatur Christian School. We take so much for granted. We are able to better teach the significance of the day if we are in session. We invite veterans to a special program to honor their service and their sacrifice. The Lutheran School Association stays open, said Executive Director Kyle Karsten, for the same reasons. A school-wide assembly pays tribute to veterans and recognizes active duty and veteran relatives and friends of the school community. We take an intentional approach to making sure our kids understand and know what Veterans Day is all about, Karsten said. It's been a tradition. This year, the Decatur School District joined those ranks. To help understand who veterans are, students will use the school day to participate in a variety of lessons centered on veterans and why we honor these men and women, Superintendent Lisa Taylor said. The district will observe the holiday Wednesday, November 25th, as part of an extended Thanksgiving break instead, she said. Stephen Decatur Middle School teacher Larry Burgett, known around school as Mr. B, spoke to the science classes about his service in Vietnam. Principal Dolores Brown directed each department to choose its own method of observing Veterans Day, and Phil Weineke, whose science classroom is across the hall from Burgett's, organized the science department's observance around Burgett's presentation on the Vietnam War. At Thomas Jefferson Middle School, Principal Nate Shepard reminded students to be mindful of their freedom and what it cost. As a society, collectively, we're spoiled, he said. We don't know what it's like to go through a draft. We probably never experience something like that again. John Hill Magnet School put on a USO-style show for their program, and teacher Liz Bartimus was more affected than she realized she would be, she said. We need to appreciate the sacrifices our military personnel and their families make every day to give us the freedom we take for granted, Bartimus said. As Taps was played today, many wet eyes of our veteran guests and their families were seen. Thanks to you all who protect our way of life. Let freedom ring. A quick AP article out of Champaign, University of Illinois resolution urges end to a budget battle. Pardon me. University of Illinois trustees are set to vote on a resolution urging state lawmakers to end an impasse and pass a budget. The resolution set for a vote Thursday urges immediate adoption of a state budget. It also says the university has taken steps to cut spending and plan for shared sacrifice in light of the state's financial challenges, the Champaign News-Gazette reports. Illinois colleges have gone without state funding since July 1st. University of Illinois President Tim Killeen told a State House committee Tuesday that the university is going through cash reserves at a rate of $75 million per month, and that the university would be very different if there's still no budget next spring. If we go through May next year, then you will see a very different University of Illinois, he said. It will no longer be a top 25 university, which we can point to with pride. I can tell you that. University of Illinois students who get need-based financial aid from the state were told in a mass email Tuesday they might be billed for part of their grants next semester if lawmakers fail to fund the monetary award program. Bad news everywhere. Our next article was written by Teresa Churchill, who's a senior writer for the Decatur Herald and Review. Nursing class benefits from simulation exercises. Having undergone surgery to repair a broken hip 3 days earlier, Stan Jones began having trouble breathing shortly before he was to be moved to a rehabilitation unit. 3 minutes later, his heart stopped. After charge nurse Taylor Flanders called a code blue, David Haynes lowered the head of the patient's bed while Jenica Crushall rolled the bed away from the wall. Crushall then helped Aureli Arredondo and Christina Claros roll Jones onto his side so they could slip a backboard under him. Flanders began chest compressions. Haynes attached defibrillator leads to the man's chest, and Claros covered his nose and mouth with a handheld respirator. Clear, commanded Melanie Olson, a member of the code team, just before the team shocked the patient's heart in a vain attempt to save his life. She finally called time of death caused by a pulmonary embolism at 11:44 a.m. It's not really the way I wanted to end the class, but it was exciting, Olson said. I feel like my adrenaline's still going. I didn't feel as clueless as I thought I would, Claros added. Olson, Claros, and all the other people involved in the code scenario involving a patient simulator were nursing students in their last semester at Millikan University before earning their bachelor's degrees in December. The class is a new elective called Senior Simulation Experience, developed by instructor Charlotte Bivens, coordinator of the university's Human Simulation and Nursing Labs, and John Blakeman, a lecturer who will earn his master's degree in nursing this semester. Employers don't think students are ready to hit the floor running when they get out of nursing school, Bivens said. This class allows them to practice their critical thinking in a safe environment. Safe, but not necessarily secure, perhaps, as students expressed uncertainty before the scenario began about relative merits of different treatments for cardiac arrest. Don't worry, I'll be there, Blakeman promised. But you won't be in 3 months, Emily Muscadelli pointed out, generating some understanding laughter from her classmates. Patients the students encountered over the course of the 8-week class represented a variety of ages and exhibited health problems often not experienced in clinical courses. Such is not always the case, however, as Muscadelli, a senior from Springfield, shared an instance when a chaplain brought a woman into the room where Muscadelli was on top of her husband, delivering chest compressions. She comes in and tries to wake him up, and it was sad, Muscadelli said as she struggled with tears. He was cold and everything, and it was like he's a real person. He was someone's husband or dad or brother. Muscadelli's classmates are Aureli Arredondo of McChesney Park, Christina Claros of Urbana, Christina Espinoza and Taylor Flanders of Decatur, David Haynes of Oriana, Jenica Crushall of Springfield, Mac McClintock of Kankakee, and Melanie Olson of Bloomington. Sometimes I think people on code teams get kind of hardened, and that's not a good thing, Bivens said. Blakeman said the hospital where he works conducts a debriefing on the floor after code situations so employees can learn what they can do better next time and process their emotions. Sometimes you have patients there for several days and you get to know them and their family members, he said. It's hard and it's very emotional, especially when you think you've got 40 more years ahead of you of loss and death. But there will be a lot of good things too, a lot of positive as well. We turn now to the Decatur Tribune and pick up news from here and there, which is their local news column. The first item, Decatur Police Department to hold next Coffee with a Cop event at IHOP November 18th. So that's, 6 days away. So a week from tomorrow. No, that's not right. What day is the 18th? Wednesday, a week from yesterday. The Decatur Police Department will hold its next Coffee with a Cop event from 8 to 10 a.m. on Wednesday, November 18th, at the IHOP restaurant located at 1280 East Pershing Road in Decatur. Coffee with a Cop is a national program providing residents with an opportunity to sit down with police and discuss safety concerns, neighborhood issues, and provide input all over a cup of coffee. Officers will be serving coffee during the event, and residents will have a chance to speak with officers from a variety of departmental areas, including detectives, neighborhood patrol officers, and the police chief. Coffee with a Cop represents the latest in a number of new initiatives designed to increase the level of transparency between the Decatur Police Department and city residents as a way to strengthen relationships between officers and the thousands of residents they serve on a daily basis. Other initiatives include the introduction of DPDCConnect.com, and that's really DPDConnect.com. A new police portal providing online access to public police information, and the enhanced continued use of social media to inform residents about the department. Millikan University's Human Service Connection and the Macon County Continuum of Care will host its annual Box City event in support of Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week on Friday, November 13th. That's tomorrow, beginning at 5 p.m. The event is part of Millikan's End campaign to bring hunger and homelessness awareness to the local community. Box City will take place at the Miller Quad on Millikan University's campus with a group check-in starting at 5 p.m. The cost for attending Box City will be a donation of one non-perishable food item. As part of Box City, Millikan students spend the evening outside in cardboard boxes on the Miller Quad to simulate an accurate perception on homelessness. On Saturday, November 14th, Box City participants will walk to Salvation Army, located at 229 West Main Street in Decatur, between 7 and 8 a.m. to help serve breakfast starting at 8:30. In addition to Box City, Millikan Human Service Connection, Office of Inclusion and Student Engagement, and the Macon County Continuum of Care will be hosting a screening of the documentary The Home Stretch on Thursday, November 19th at the Avon Theater, located at 426 North Water Street. The screening will start at 7 p.m. The Home Stretch follows three homeless teens as they fight to stay in school, graduate, and build a future. Tickets are free for the event. National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is held each year the week before Thanksgiving. It is a time to share our compassion with our neighbors who are experiencing homelessness. This year, National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week will be held from November 14th through the 22nd. Participating in National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week not only brings greater awareness to the local community, but helps promote the national endeavor to end hunger and homelessness. For more information on Millikan University's Box City event, contact Dr. Mary Garrison, Millikan Associate Professor of Social Work, at 217-424-5074 or by email at mgarrison, that's mgarrison, at millikan.com. Our next item, City Manager and Council Talk Priorities. an emphasis on exceptional municipal customer service being an expectation, renewed focus on annexations as a growth tool, and the development of targeted revenue sources to fund very specific community needs were all a part of a list of priorities important to community growth and revitalization presented on Monday night. The discussion came about as part of a presentation by City Manager Tim Gleason, proposing six categories of focus for the city developed as part of his first 7 months as city manager. The priorities are meant to spur growth while petitioning Decatur to control its own destiny, addressing declining property values while improving the desirability of our community. Recommended priorities include enhanced city customer service as an expectation. This includes the continued development of a can-do attitude and on finding ways to get things done. Gleason said that there are countless examples of staff going the extra mile to provide great service, but that there is always work that can be done for us all to get better. Increased community and board involvement by city staff. Focus on annexations, strengthening community relationships to include working with landlords and seeking chances to give them more leverage with problem tenants, while continuing with a strong code of enforcement to help provide better housing and environmental conditions, especially for young people. This also includes strengthening relationships with the business community, labor, the school and park district, and seizing opportunities where available to encourage minority hiring and contracting. Economic development and development of community-targeted community growth revenue streams. Growth revenue suggestions included a local motor fuel tax to fund local neighborhood projects, enhancement of liquor license costs and fees associated with gaming to pay for community cleanup and redevelopment, and having a fire department run single ambulance to cover an estimated $4 to $8 million in department building repairs or replacement. Gleason said that all of the ideas were items that he had discussed with Mayor McElroy before his passing as ways to impact our community in a big way. He said that the revenue sources, if approved, would be tied to specific line items for the purposes identified and not get redirected into the city's general fund for other items. This allows us to control our own destiny. The success of Decatur drives the success of the region, he said. A quick note before we take a quick break here. Decatur Frontiers Service Club will be taking orders for fruitcakes. You know that means the holidays are around the corner. The 2-pound fruitcake will cost $20. Orders may be placed by calling Burl Stoner at 429-0333. Cakes will be on sale November 20th and 21st at Soy Capital Bank, corner of East El Dorado and North Main Streets in Decatur, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Previous orders may be picked up at that time. Okay, like I say, I'm beginning to feel like holidays are sneaking up on us. We're going to take a quick break right now and then return for the second half hour of news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 12th. Hang on, we'll be right back.